Welcome again to another episode of Adam's Corner. It's that time of the month for the physical media report, the Blu-ray, the 4K, all those releases that we cover once a month. And I'm joined on this episode by my good friend, Paige Schechter, who comes on every couple of months to one of the rotating line of guests who help me with these Blu-ray releases. And I just so appreciate having her on. She's always so knowledgeable about these archival titles that are put out, and always has some insightful things to say. And she also has her her Facebook page. You can go ahead and give another plug for that if you want quick.
Oh, hi, Adam. I love being here. It's always nice talking movies with you. I have a little corner of the social media universe called Sibling Cinema, and it's an area where my sister and myself talk about movies and television and pretty much we'll talk about it. It's called Sibling Cinema, but we'll talk about anything in the pop culture medium. We are sort of known for doing what we call the tenors. They're 10-word reviews. So we can review anything we've watched recently, movies, television, occasional play gets in there. And it's just fun because people come in and they comment on ours, and they've started to do their own tenors, which we love. We love anybody can always come on to Facebook or Twitter or X, whatever you want to call that, or Instagram or Threads, and add your tenor, and we love seeing them.
Yep, it's always interesting. I love checking in with you guys from time to time to see what your latest ones are, and sometimes you make them up on the fly as we're doing this show. I always love that when you do that.
I do have a couple things in store if we get to those particular movies. I have some debuts.
Well, fantastic. We'll be looking forward to that. Now, you've been a busy bee here lately. You actually just came in about a day or so ago back from a con, as they're called these days, So tell us a little bit about that. I saw some of your photos, and those were, I was very excited to see some of the people that you rub shoulders with. So,
yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit?
You rub shoulders with a lot of people there because it's very crowded. I was at Chiller Theater Convention in Parsippany, New Jersey. They do it twice a year, and it started as a horror con, but then it's sort of segged into pop culture, so there are people from all kinds of walks of life. And so yesterday I met, or you know, Friday, I met Sybil Shepherd, who's such an inspiration to me because I was such a diehard fan of Moonlighting. Loved her show, Sybil. These are both shows that I still watch, you know, for a little pick-me-up every now and then.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Just in general, her movies. You know, she has a really great catalog of movies. And so I met her, and I actually got a little emotional. And when I did that, she started to get a little emotional. Mm. So we're about welling up, and then the handler is like, ready to take the picture. And I'm like, we're going from crying to smiling in 10 seconds, you know. But the funniest part was in 2015, I think I Facebook messaged her, and I said, do you ever do pop culture conventions? I'd love to see you at Chiller someday. And she said, like, I don't know if it was her or a social media person handling her account, but
right.
It said, you know, it would be a pleasure to meet you. And so it happened 8 or so years later.
Yay!
I can't count. But I got to meet Sybil Shepherd, which was amazing. Then I also met Rosanna Arquette, who she's in so many movies that I'm such a big fan. Like, when she's in a movie, I'm excited about it. And I said, I'm such a big fan of yours and your family's. And she's, well, thank you. You know, she said, well, thank you for that. The really exciting, this shows you how into all of this I am. Craig Baxley was with the Warriors reunion. There was a huge Warriors reunion. A lot of people there, a lot of people getting their vests signed. But I know him as the stuntman on Close Encounters of the Third Kind who broke his collarbone doing a stunt. It's when the police car careens off the bank. He broke his collarbone. So I'm like, will you talk to me about that? And he's like, I can't believe you know me, who I am from that. I'm like, well, it's my favorite movie in the world. So yeah, I do. But he did. He told me about what happened, and he was really, really cool guy. And I met, John, is it Kaplos? I don't know how to pronounce his last name. He is so well known to everybody as the janitor in the Breakfast Club. But again, yes. I have my X-Files book that I get signed by anybody who was on the show, and he was in the Burt Reynolds episode, Improbable, so I got to talk to him about that, and then we had a little sort of joking repartee thing going on. I'm like, you're my favorite janitor, and he says, I clean up well. So I thought that was a great, he probably had that as a prepared line, but it, you know, and I met Helen Slater, you know, Supergirl and Ruthless People and all the great movies she's been in, and Dylan McDermott, another favorite. We talked a little about Home for the Holidays, which is, that's my Thanksgiving movie. It's the movie I watch every Thanksgiving. So I got to meet some really great people. Everybody was really, really nice. It was a good time. It's always fun because Chiller is not quite like a New York Comic Con level convention, so the prices are cheaper than if you go to Comic Con, you know, you're grand out easy because it just costs so much to meet people. So it's a little less expensive, but boy, is it a good time. Always love being there.
Well, that's, you know, it sounds like you had a blast, and I'm somewhat jealous, I have to admit, you know, because, you know, Craig Baxley, now he's a legend to me. You know, he directed so many, he directed a couple of, you know, I would say, films that, you know, have their certain fans, you know.
Yes.
Like, Action Jackson is one, and, Stone Cold, I believe, is another, and, I Come in Peace, I believe, might be another. And then, of course, for me, he was the stunt coordinator for Kolchak the Night Stalker, so that's the thing that really.
Oh, God, I love Kolchak, yes.
Yeah, so that. I would love to talk to him. In fact, I think he played a couple of the creatures on Kolchak. I think he and Richard Kiel, they shared duties. Yeah, I think he was like a Mr. R-I-N-G, that robot that goes haywire or whatever. I think he actually played Mr. R-I-N-G in that one episode of... we're really getting into the weeds here, I know, but...
I know. Well, before we get out of the weeds, let me just say, he's got a whole bunch of books he's written about his life in movies and television. So they're on Amazon. You can check them out. I picked up Driven because there is a Close Encounters section in there. So I had to have that. Had to have him sign it for me on the spot. But definitely anybody who's into any aspect of that, you know, the stunts, writing, editing, producing, you know, check out Amazon. He's got a whole bunch of books there waiting for you.
Well, that's good. That's great. I need to get one of his books because, like I said, and he's somebody that I've dreamed of having him on my show and to chat with him for a bit about his career.
Shoot. I wish I told him that.
I know. I would love to have made that contact with him, and maybe I'll see what I can do and reach out there through the channels, as it were, and see if he'll agree to it. I don't know, but I'm sure he's
excellent,
got.
Cause yeah, he's got the stories.
Yeah, I am sure. Yeah, that is great. Yeah, and that Close Encounter story. I'm so glad you brought that up because that was the perfect timing, as it were. So yeah. Well, I guess we'll just go ahead and take a leap here into these April releases.
All right. Let's dive in.
Yeah, so April the 2nd, we'll start chronologically as we normally do. Major League from 1989. This made its 4K debut via Paramount. And there are a few featurettes here. I'm not sure if these are archival material that's being recycled or if it's new stuff. I'm not sure because I didn't get a review copy of this one, but that's fine because I'm not really, number one, I'm not a big baseball fan. That's number one, or televised sports in general, really. And I guess secondly, I saw this film when it came out and it was getting fairly good reviews and I just didn't think it was funny at all. I was mostly bored. I was 18 when it came out, so I guess I was the prime audience, but it didn't do a thing for me. And I think I actually went and saw the second one. I guess I was a glutton for punishment and of course it's even lesser And so I know a lot of people love this film. You may love it, but it just didn't do anything for me. And maybe I was 18 years old. Maybe it being a 50-something guy now, maybe I would feel differently. But just I didn't have a huge desire to see this one again. But generally getting good reviews on the video front in terms of like the quality of the transfer. So I'll let you talk about it because I'm sure you've seen it.
Well, actually, it's funny because I am a baseball person and I am a sports person, but I didn't really like that movie either. So I don't have it. I have a huge, huge, humongous DVD collection and that movie is not in it.
Yeah, it's I could do without having seen that. And there, and you know, so, and like I said, I remember going to the theater opening weekend in April. I think it was April of 89 when it came out, I believe. But yeah, I was I was in college back then and pursuing my broadcasting degree, as it were. And, I don't know what I was thinking. I don't know what part of me thought that I would actually enjoy that. But anyway, neither here nor there. We'll move along to how about the film that bankrupted Carolco Studios? Or is it Carolco? I never could figure out whether. But they were the studio behind Rambo, First Blood, the second Terminator film. And basically, this is the film that infamously, I think the price tag was like $100 million and it made like five or something. Cutthroat Island, we're talking about, from 1995. Gina Davis and Matthew Modine and Rennie Harlan. I think he was either married or engaged or involved somehow with Gina Davis romantically around that time when this film came out. But it's been released in a steelbook edition by Lionsgate. I did not get a review copy of this one either, but there are fans of this film. Some people do love Cutthroat Island. I don't know what your thoughts are. I never actually saw it, I have to admit. And now I kind of want to, because the reviews were pretty bad when it came out, but now it can't be any worse than Pirates, the Roman Polanski film, right? When we're talking about pirate films. So,
I wasn't a fan of that one either.
Okay.
So I don't have anything to impart.
Okay. Well, maybe I didn't miss anything as it turns out. Yeah. So Guardians of the Galaxy being issued in 4K in a steelbook. I don't know that. And the Avengers and Doctor Strange, all of these Disney releases. Black Panther is another one. It's funny. Disney just keeps on recycling and regurgitating things they've already previously released. I guess just trying to pick everybody's pocket, you know, instead of, you know, and they've got this huge library of films that have yet to some have yet to come to Blu-ray, and many have yet to make their 4K debut. And we're talking big hits like Armageddon and The Rock and just a lot of stuff from the 90s. Crimson Tide comes to mind, Con Air. There's just Tombstone is another one. Tons of films that just sit there languishing, and yet they keep reissuing and regurgitating these Marvel steelbooks. But whatever, if that's your thing, then
yes.
Run out and go get them.
Yeah, steelbooks are good. I do have a couple of 10-word reviews to share from that. I have a Doctor Strange.
Okay.
And it's Marvel draws me into another universe with mighty strange cast. I was really taken aback because Benedict Cumberbatch debuted. He became Doctor Strange, and I was such a huge Sherlock fan that I just had to see that one. So, and I liked it. You know, I was really. It's not really my universe. Marvel's not my universe, but they got me with that one. And then the other one I did was Black Panther. Mm-hmm. And my 10-word review was first Oscar-nominated superhero movie, did so with grace, anticipated substance.
That's good. That's fitting, I would say. Yeah,
it's apt, yes.
Yeah, I think that's right on target. I saw Black Panther when it came out in 2018, and I have yet to see it since. I enjoyed it well enough, but I just didn't have the strong desire. Some films you see, and it doesn't mean they're bad. You just see them, and it's just not something that you want to come back to. It's just,
yeah,
I've been
absolutely.
There, I've done that. Black Panther was one of those films. It just didn't.
Yep.
I knew that it was a fine experience when I first saw it, but it's, and most of the Marvel films are like that for me. The repeat value is just not there. The emotional rewards that I get from something a little more deep or less cinematic candy variety type, you know, that's more or less what that is. It has its place. I mean, you know, a diet of too much serious stuff is not good. Everybody needs a little entertainment every now and then, but too much of the cinematic candy is not good either. So it'll rot your brain, folks, in case you don't know. So so Lionsgate also issuing a red 2-film collection in 4K. The films with Bruce Willis as the I can't remember, was he an assassin in those films? I saw the first one. It's been so long. We're talking 13 years now, so 14 years now at this point. I can't remember. I think he's an assassin in that. I know Ernest Borgnine was in it. I remember that. And so it was, you know.
Oh, I have tenors on those too, because I actually do like those. Like, we were talking about the Marvels. I don't, like you, it's not really repeat value. I can see it and enjoy it, but it's something I would go back and revisit. But the Reds, I did, because I thought that was really entertaining. And that sort of is the bridge for me between, you know, that universe and what I really want to see again. And I just thought it was so smart and funny that I love watching those, the Red movies. So I have tenors on both of them.
Well, let's hear it.
To share. Okay, yes. The first one, it kind of feels equal parts old school and fresh, which I guess is my point, what I'm saying. Like, it does something that other movies don't do, other movies from that universe and other regular, you know, the regular movies we go to see. And then my Red 2 review was, they're old hands at Cloak and Dagger stuff. It might be my only 10-word review that actually has the word er. Cloak and Dagger stuff. So those are my reviews of the two Red movies.
Again, spot on, I would say. So yeah, they are what they are. You know, like I said, I'm not saying they're bad, but they're entertaining for what they are. So you could do a lot worse. With probably about 95% of what's in theaters now, you could do a lot worse. But anyway,
very true. Yeah,
we'll not belabor that point. So Lahaine, I think that's how you pronounce it, or Lahaine, not sure. It's that may be it. 24 hours in the lives of three young men in the French suburbs. Day after a violent riot. This was very well reviewed. They say it's a tough film to watch, though. 1995 film. Yes. Criterion releasing this. Vincent Cassel in this. I like Vincent Cassel. He's a good actor, and I would like to see this, but I did get a review copy of this one. I did get a Criterion review, but this wasn't one of them. And this one has a few extras. It's got two commentaries, trailers, a still gallery, deleted extended scenes, and a couple of featurettes here. You know, there's actually a documentary, 10 Years of Lahaine. Documentary film. So yeah, if you are a fan of this one, and I do want to see this film, it's something that I just, like I said, didn't get to the review copy, but it's on the to-do list, as it were. So
It, like you said, I haven't seen it since 1995. Mm-hmm. But it is a tough film to get into, but it's worthy. And I remember that I went to see it because Jodie Foster was a big fan of it. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, If she thinks it's worthy, I'm going to check it out. And I remember it being very tough to watch, but I am looking forward to seeing it again. And Criterion is like a great way to go with that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the transfer, you know, is going to be it's flawless just about every time with them. They rarely miss the boat on that. So, Tinto Brass is a adult film director, I guess you would call him. I guess that's the best way to describe him. Famous for making the kind of films that used to turn up in the middle of the night on Cinemax when I was a young lad growing up. And one of his films, All Ladies Do It, from 1992, probably did turn up on Cinemax at one point. It's about a married woman who winds up in short-lived erotic adventures throughout the film. And she has a high libido, from what the plot description says. I have not seen this film, but anyway.
Sure you have, I'm sure.
But anyway, if you're a Tinto Brass fan, you know, we don't judge about the product coming out here. We just like to get the word out if this is your sort of thing. So anyway, All Ladies Do It is out on 4K from Cult Epics. I did not get a review copy of this one, but... anyway, you know, if you know anything about Tinto Brass, you know what you're getting into. So, anyway, so I think it's the first time ever release, a Blu-ray release for Stigmata from 1999. I did get that one. Transfer is pretty good here on this one. Of course, it's, you know, you got Rosanna Arquette. I mean, not... Patricia Arquette, sorry, I'll get it out. Yeah, you got me. I was thinking earlier, Rosanna Arquette, and I'm thinking, that's not right. No, Patricia Arquette, Gabriel Byrne, Jonathan Pryce. It's a tale of possession, demonic possession, and Rupert Wainwright, the director on this. There's a couple of, there's a making of Stigmata here, deleted scenes, alternate ending, theatrical trailer. This is being released by Cape Light Pictures, which is a new... upstart distribution arm, I think, that's getting some of these MGM titles, of which this was one. So, Stigmata, I'm sure you've seen it at some point, maybe.
I saw it a long time ago. The problem with sibling cinema, not really a problem, just that we started that 8 years ago or something, and I saw so many movies before that I wish I had done 10 word reviews on, but we didn't come up with it until more recently, so I don't have something to share. But I do remember Patricia Arquette in it, and it's very visceral is mm-hmm. my memory of it.
Yeah, that it is. And you know, like I said, this new transfer is quite good on this. So, you know, but it is a newer, I say newer, it's all going on, it's 25 years old at this point, I can't believe, for God's sakes. But anyway, doesn't seem like it. But anyway, Cape Light Pictures distributor on that. Messiah of Evil has been previously issued, the 1973 horror film, and this is kind of a cult favorite amongst a lot of horror fans. There was a limited edition released earlier, say, standard edition, finally, for those who missed the other one. It's Radiance Films putting this out. So, you know, if you haven't seen Messiah of Evil or didn't get the other one, well, there you go. It's now available. So we move up to April 9th, and this is where you and I get to do what we had long wanted to do, and we'll start with the 1976 version of King Kong. Dino De Laurentiis' production of King Kong finally making its 4K debut stateside from Paramount. This has previously been issued by Studio Canal. Put this out at the tail end of 2022. And before that, I think it was 2021, we had the... special edition, two-disc special edition from Scream Factory that mm-hmm. actually gave us the world home video debut of the television cut, which we never thought we would see on home video.
Yes.
And it was the complete 3-hour, 14-minute television cut of King Kong, which admittedly, some of the stuff there is a little redundant, but for people who grew up watching and loving this film, it was just an amazing thing to see it in such good quality. I mean, it really looks good. And that has been also included here, but only in Blu-ray, not 4K. So you don't get that. The special edition features, unfortunately, are not included on this one, although they were included on the Studio Canal 4K release. So if you have the Scream Factory or the Studio Canal releases, you probably want to hang on to them. My good friend Ray Morton, who contributed the audio commentary to the original film, the theatrical cut of the film, I had talked to him. This was first announced, and he had told me that that they Paramount told him they weren't going to include it. So I knew right then and there we weren't going to get any extras when he gave me the inside track on that. So I knew it was probably going to be just a movie-only thing. But Ray's commentary is quite fantastic. He goes into all the nuts and bolts of everything, and he literally wrote the book on it, King Kong, and his book is great. So if you want the history of King Kong, his book is still out there. But anyway, so this new edition, I'll just get into the technical nuts and bolts. I did do a quick video on YouTube, but I'll say that there's been a lot of controversy. The Studio Canal version had a bit of a green teal look to the transfer. The color was a little, it was a little different, shall we say. I think that's been corrected as far as I could tell in this new edition on my 100-inch screen projector, my home theater. It looked pretty natural to me, I would say. And the 5.1 track, you get a 5.1 audio on the original theatrical film. And, if you crank that subwoofer up, you can get a little low-end action when Kong is stomping around. That sounds pretty good. And John Barry's score pops out at you in the rear channels. That really sounds great. I mean, it's not up to par with what you get in, contemporary audio tracks, but it's pretty good. So I would say that if you skipped out on the Studio Canal edition and you decided to just hold out for an American release of this 4K, just keep your Scream Factory edition for the extras and upgrade to this one for the picture quality, because it is quite good. I think the megabytes per second, the bit rate, I was checking that, and I think it hovers around 40 megabytes per second. Some people are really nerdy about that sort of thing, because the higher the bit rate, the better the picture or whatever. So I checked it, and it was around 40 most of the time. So anyway, King Kong, that's the technical stuff. Now, we're going to get into a little bit of a personal discussion. Now, you know a little bit probably about my story, first encounters with this film. When did you first encounter King Kong? When did you first see it? I don't think I've ever asked you that question.
Okay, before I do that, let me just add something to what you said about the nuts and bolts.
Yeah.
This version has a streaming copy in it, which is not something that I had gotten in the previous versions. And
that's
so
true.
I like to have it on my computer. I like to listen to King Kong while I'm working for some strange reason.
Oh, yeah.
So
sure.
If you wanted streaming on your computer, this, I think, is the first time that it's been available. And again, not the TV version. But by the way, that TV version has... when Kong stomps on Charles Grodin, you see the hat.
Yes.
And I always thought that was in the regular release, but it is not. So I remembered that particular part from TV, from watching it on TV. And why isn't that in the movie version?
Yeah.
Because it's such a signature moment. But anyway, I digress.
Same here. I always thought that too. It's funny you say that.
So when did I first see King Kong? I don't remember when I first saw it, but I can tell you that I used to have recurring King Kong dreams in which I was being chased by King Kong. And it was always the same dream. I was running down this particular road in my town, and he walked through a tire factory, and all the tires started rolling down the street. So they're like knocking me over. And then I went into a movie theater, and there was this big cherry pie on the screen. Yeah, that's not subliminal. There's nothing there to. But his eye was like in the window, sort of like when he's eyeing Jessica Lange in the bar. And it was the same dream over and over and over again, my recurring King Kong dream. But I absolutely love that movie, and I'll get a little into it when I get to the tenors. But it was ahead of its time in terms of commerce versus nature. Jack and Juan are the protect Kong people, and Grodin and the others are the industry. You know, they want oil, they want him, they want to make money off of him. By the way, Charles Grodin is never right in that movie. Everything he says is always wrong. Every single thing he says is wrong. But I love him in the movie. I don't want to put him down because he has some of the most memorable lines, you know, let's not get eaten alive on this island. And then
bring the mosquito spray.
Bring the mosquito spray. Yes, exactly. But I love that movie. You know, the original King Kong is the classic, of course, but I watch this version more. This is my Kong, you know, and it means so much to me. I just love watching it. I think Jessica Lange, except for Pauline Kael, everyone didn't get that Jessica Lange was performing, that she was playing a character who was a little bit flighty or a lot of bit flighty. She does it so well, and I think she and Jeff Bridges look so gorgeous together. It's like might be the best looking couple I've ever seen in any movie ever. Mm-hmm. And so it's a movie that's in my top five, if not my top three, and it's one I'll love forever.
Yeah, I'm right. I obviously am right there with you, and you know, it's, you know, you constantly have to defend this film to people. You know, there's so many people that say, you know, oh, he looks, when he looks at her in some of those, with some of the, like his smiling face, you know, he's leering like something from a Benny Hill skit or something. You know, I've heard that before, and a lot of people are, you know, and they take shots at, you know, the Lorenzo Simple's dialogue. But, you know, for all of the campy dialogue that they take shots at, there's some really profound dialogue there, and I think people miss that. Like when he says, oh, those people will be great to, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but, you know, when Charles Grodin says, oh, those people will be grateful to have him, to be rid of him, and he goes, no, you're wrong. You took the terror and the mystery out of their lives. A year from now, there'll be a bunch of burned out drunks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I love that. I just love it.
That is a great line. And there's another, oh, what's the other line I'm thinking of? Okay, you continue and I'll interrupt once I thought of this line.
Sure, that's fine. Yeah, I love it when he says when he's telling him the crew about where they're going, and he says this is an island just waiting for us to twist the cap off, and he goes, I'll take 50 cents of that.
Oh, there's so many good things, like when they realize they can't get oil because it's not going to be for thousands of years, and he says, the tiger in the tank with Exxon, it did millions with just a paper tiger, you know?
Yep.
And the one I was thinking of is when Jack and Dwan are in the bar and they're talking about their relationship. And he says that, was it in the, now I'm remembering things wrong. But they're talking and he says it's in her blood like dope because she'd been through so much excitement, and you know that, and you get that this relationship between them maybe is not going to work out. And there's a lot more in the TV cut where they keep talking and it's more in your face, like this isn't going to work out because this reason, but they cut that out for the movie release, which was the right decision. It's the line about it being in her blood like dope that you really understand when you saw what she went through and you felt it, and like the terror, and but at the same time the excitement of it, you really, really get it.
Yeah, that's great stuff too. You're right, and he says something about, he makes reference to, you know, she wants he says, you look great in chinchilla or something like that. He says I wouldn't be able to, you know, on a,
he's a college professor. Yeah,
college professor can't provide you with stuff like that. You know, he knows that she's gonna have, you know, exquisite taste because of what she's been used to, and he's not gonna be able to do it, and that's ultimately probably going to disappoint her, even though relationship shouldn't be based on monetary things, you know, in the real world. Sometimes that plays into it, unfortunately.
Especially if you're coming from where she's coming from. Like, you know, she was on a boat. She was going to be a movie star. She was getting, you know, probably eating caviar and champagne every single day.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I had a crazy idea, and I don't think I've never publicly mentioned this, but I'll say it here. But I always wondered, it's always been curious to me, how did they get him from the big pit when they knocked him out with the chloroform to the ship? So I thought, with this new AI technology, and of course, it can be used for bad or good, but I thought, wouldn't it be great if somebody wrote a script, maybe talking 90 minutes, that shows what happened from the time he was knocked out to the time they got him on the ship, and then you could just AI regenerate these actors who are no longer with us.
Yeah.
Charles Grodin, and it could actually have some excitement to it, because they're having trouble getting him out of there, and suddenly he's coming to again, and it's like, oh my God, we're what are we gonna do? It's like they're under pressure, and so I thought it could be a fun script. I thought about just writing it just as an exercise for myself, just to do like a 90-minute script about how they got him from there to.
Oh, that would be fun. Yeah.
Yeah, just to say, just to see what I could come up with, and it could be, but it would be great if they could just use the AI for that purpose, just to make this missing King Kong film that relates that information. I would be the first person to line up and see that, but.
I'll be second.
Yep. So anyway, this AI technology is interesting where it's going, and so, like I said, in some ways it's bad, but so I was mentioning they're saying that it's going to probably get to a point where you can actually program tell your program what you want, and it will cook up an episode of a television show using regenerated actors or whatever, and you can come home at night and you'll have it. It'll be ready for you. And I was having a discussion with my sister. She goes, that sounds creepy. And I said, well, it might be creepy. I said, but unfortunately they're dead. There's nothing we can do about that. And in a perfect world, they'd still be alive. I'd love to have Darren McGavin alive for some new episodes of Kolchak the Night Stalker, but he's dead,
right.
And there's no bringing him back. So what else can you do? So I would love to, my mind reels at the possibilities of being able to see new episodes of like Kolchak the Night Stalker or these shows that were canceled prematurely when I was a kid that I loved, and to see new ones with these actors. It's just like, I don't know that I'll live long enough to see it, but the thought of it is exciting to me. I don't know, but anyway, I'm getting way ahead of myself, or way off topic here, but just had a little rant there. So anyway.
I love talking about this stuff, so you can't be off topic with me and when it comes to this.
Very good.
Speaking of off topic, okay, one of the things I like to do is I always have the closed captioning on when I'm watching something.
Yeah, me too.
And one of the ones from King Kong is the worst thing I've ever seen on closed captioning. It's so incredibly not right that it makes me laugh every time. It's when the boat comes to try and rescue Dwan after she was taken.
Uh-huh.
And Jack gets off the boat, and what he says is, come on, Bone. He's talking to the other guy on the boat.
Right.
Come on,
sure.
Bone. Yeah. What the closed captioning says is, tie boat, which I don't even know what that means, tie boat. someone got that so incredibly wrong, but it makes me laugh every time I see it anyway. But tie boat?
I think somebody fell asleep and tried to fill in the blank. So they'll just guess at it.
They couldn't quite figure it out. They didn't realize that the guy's name was Bone.
Yeah,
I don't know,
right.
But so very wrong.
The great Julius Harris. What a great character actor he was. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
So yeah. Well, I think we missed these two. April 5th, we had Let's Get Harry, Strange Invaders, Batteries Not Included, and Ravagers. Those are all imprint releases. I don't know if you have any relationship to any of these films or anything to say about them. Strange Invaders used to turn up on HBO quite a bit when I was a kid growing up in the early days of cable. So that's one that I saw multiple times. And, of course, Batteries Not Included. I've seen that couple of times too, and it's fine. But anyway, Imprint is a I think they're a British label, and they're UK, but they may be Australian, I can't remember. But anyway, they're getting to the American Blu-ray game, as it were, releasing some of their stuff stateside. So that's kind of exciting. So, Lady Frankenstein is a fairly new film.
Hold on.
Oh, go ahead.
Hold on a sec. Can I do our tenors for King Kong before we?
Oh yeah, let's do it. Continue. Yeah. Sure.
Okay, because both my sister and I have ones for this. It's one of our favorite movies, as we've mentioned. Mm-hmm. My sister's is Story of Beauty and the Beast and the Other Beast, which I thought was pretty funny. You can read so much into that one. I can take that so many different ways. And mine is Scoff If You Must, But Ahead of Its Time Environmentally, which is what we were previously talking about.
Yeah, that's very true. And isn't it interesting how... You know, and that's the thing that always bothered me about the 1933 film. I mean, it's a great film. The original King Kong, we'll come back to this really quickly, though. But the 33 film, it is rightfully considered a classic. But nobody takes any responsibility for anything in that film. Nobody.
Right.
It's like, the big dumb ape, he fell for the gal, and, well, he got what was coming to him. He fell off the building. That's what he deserved. You know, that's kind of the attitude
right,
of all
right.
these people, you know, and... and they talk about the bad dialogue in the 76 film, but there's some pretty choice pieces of dialogue in the 33 film too. A lot of 1930s slang, as it were. So, you can't really just say, the 76 version gets a little campy from time to time, but the 30s version does have a lot of that 30s slang that tends to get overlooked. So there's that.
It does. Pauline Kael really liked the 1976 version, and she's like, it makes, you know, King Kong has more personality, and the female victim named Dwan here, you know, Fay Wray, all she did was scream because she was scared, which I understand. I totally understand that. But I love the way the Dwan character has feeling for Kong. You know, there's emotion there. There's more that it's not just black and white. There's more there. And I think that's why both of us take to it so much.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you were sensitive, and I was a sensitive kid, I always was, they always said I was a 40-year-old trapped in a teenager's body. You know, I've always heard that. Of course, I'm way past 40 now. So, I can only wish to be 40 again. I was always emotionally a lot more serious than a lot of my peers, shall we say. So, you know, even as a child, I was very sensitive. And I would say that film helped me to develop, that into such a sensitive and I hope I'm compassionate. I try to be anyway. But it developed my sense of compassion for other living things, you know, especially the scene at the end of the film where he's being, where the helicopters are coming for him at the end of the film. I was so empathetic with what was happening to him, even as a 6-year-old boy sitting there in the theater, because I saw the film in February of 77 at our local, we had a theater downtown in the small town I grew up in. And it was a single theater. There it wasn't the days before Cineplexes, and they were out there, but mostly in the bigger cities. But in our small town, we had a drive-in, and we had this theater downtown that was just one screen, and that's where I saw it. My mother took me, and middle of the week, I think it was a Tuesday or Wednesday night. It's very cold. It was 77 was a very cold winter. And that was, I remember coming out, and it was just, I think it was in the teens or something when we came out of the theater that night. But I'll add one more funny thing about that. I can even remember the trailers for King Kong when I saw it in the theater. To this day.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and I remember they ran the trailers for Checkered Flag or Crash, which was a Joe Don Baker film where he's like a stock car driver or something. And he's racing cars in Thailand or something. And I remember the town that dreaded sundown was the other was one of the other trailers that they ran, mm-hmm. and that's the Charles B. Pierce, the guy who made Legend of Boggy Creek. And mm-hmm. so I remember, you know, that's about a series of true story, by the way, about this hooded killer in Arkansas. Who the case was never solved in the 1940s, and he ran around with a hood shooting people and killing them. And I just remember as a 6-year-old child sitting there, and they said, and he was never found. And I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, he could be outside. He could be out in the theater. He could be standing outside the theater when I walk outside. Oh, my God. So I was mortified. Yeah, that scared the fool out of me when I saw The Town. So years later, I saw The Town That Dreaded Sundown, and I probably own it in my on Blu-ray in my collection. And it does have some pretty effective moments. I mean, there's parts of it that are a little hokey, but I just remember seeing that trailer for it when I saw King Kong. It was it came out around that time, or it did. It came to our town around that time. So those are a few of my little memories that are connected to King Kong and. And then,
I guess before we cap the King Kong discussion, yeah. I guess we should say for anybody who has kind of a PTSD thing that the World Trade Center is in this movie. And if you don't know the movie, we should just let you know that he's not scaling the Empire State Building, although there is a great shot of the Empire State Building in the background when he is scaling the World Trade Center, which is just gorgeous. I mean, it's such a great, you know, not in joke, but nod to the previous film. But I think we should say that just for anyone who hasn't watched it and maybe subjected to that kind of thing.
I'm glad you brought that up because that brings up one more memory that I do have right quick. And that is because for years and years and years, I had looked for the longer television cut of the film in the days before it was commercially available. And, you know, you had to find people who actually had it. And at one point I thought I had somebody who had it and then they had accidentally erased the tape or something. Then finally in 2001, I found somebody who had it. And so they said, yeah, I've got it with the commercials and they made me a price. And so, you know, it was one of those things, you know, I connected with somebody online and I was like, oh my God, I'm finally going to get it. And it came in the mail and it came in the mail, I think like 3 days after the towers fell.
Oh,
and I remember
God.
The guy put a note in there and he said, now you'll get to, he said, see the World Trade Centers as you'll never see them again or something like that.
Oh,
he had like
God.
A frowny face. And I'll never forget that. And I was just so profoundly sad when I got that tape in the mail. I was so excited on the one hand because it was something I hadn't seen since 1970. No, they reran it in the early 80s on NBC.
Right.
So I think I had seen it around 84 or something like that. They ran it, I think, Easter weekend, if memory serves correct. And so that was the last time I'd seen it, but it just really made my heart sink those were gone forever. And
I got my TV cut at a comic book store that just happened to have some of these kind of things, like the TV version of King Kong, and I snatched that up so quickly, and it was probably about 5 years after you got yours. And I was just so happy to see it because, like we've been talking about, that was an important part of us growing up was this movie. It's just intertwined into our lives, and especially me with the recurring nightmare, you know. So it's part of our lives.
It is. It really is. It was a defining moment. And, you know, Star Wars is a defining moment for a lot of people. But for us, you know, it was just one of those films that pre-Star Wars just really that and The Towering Inferno was the other one for me. Same director, ironically. But yes, those were the two films that just made such an incredible impression upon me seeing them in the theater both. And I've never forgotten those experiences either. So, yeah. So we will move along to Lisa Frankenstein, which is a fairly current release, released earlier this year in theaters. It's horror comedy, I guess. I don't know. I didn't see it. But it's out there. I think this is Lionsgate releasing that one. And then we'll go on to Lost in Space, which is a Shout Factory release from the 1998 Big Boot reboot, big screen adaptation of the television series. I'll get it out eventually with William Hurt and Mimi Rogers. Now, what were your thoughts on Lost in Space 1998?
Okay, my thoughts are that I saw it then and I remember nothing about it. So I don't think it made a big impression on me.
Yeah, Stephen Hopkins directed this. Akiva Goldsman and was credited as a writer. Heather Graham and Gary Oldman even appear. Isn't he Smith. I'm thinking of the character. Dr. Zachary Smith. That's it.
Okay. Yeah, I can't help you there. I'm sorry.
Dr. Smith. So that's Gary Oldman. Yeah, great casting in this film, I thought, but it just fell flat. I remember seeing it when it came out, and I thought, boy, they got this all wrong, didn't they? I hate to say it, but Akiva Goldsman is he's not science fiction's best friend. He's not a bad screenwriter per se, but I don't think he does any favors to the Star Trek things that he's been involved in. And this was a early warning that sci-fi might not be his strong suit. So I know Star Trek goes on, and he's had a lot of involvement in that, but it's not to my liking or not to my tastes, but anyway, we'll move along to The Picnic at Hanging Rock, another Criterion release. This is 4K for the first time ever from Criterion. This is Peter Weir directing this. This is about three schoolgirls and a school teacher going missing under mysterious circumstances during a trip to Hanging Rock in Victoria, Australia on Valentine's Day in 1900. I didn't get a review copy of this, but I hear that the 4K quality is good. Maybe not perfect, but it's solid. Yes, and so you're getting a few extras here. I think there's been a previous Blu-ray on Criterion.
Yes, there has.
Yeah, I thought so. You get a 31-minute and a 27-minute and a 25-minute and a 50-minute. Four documentaries, basically, I would say. So all of them under an hour is what I'm getting at. A trailer and a booklet. And they say that this is... a lot of people are saying that the original Blu-ray release from a decade ago isn't... it's not a standard upgrade. It's not a standard improvement. A super improvement, rather, over the other Blu-ray. But if you don't own it, that it's probably worth picking up. So that's what I'm hearing about it. So are you a fan of Picnic at Hanging Rock?
I am a fan. I'm a big fan of that movie. It's really nice early work by Peter Weir. Uh-huh. And unfortunately, I haven't done a tenor of it yet, but I highly recommend that. And I do have the previous Blu-ray release.
Well, good. You probably should just keep what you've got and skip the 4K.
Good idea.
Yeah. Save yourself a little do-re-mi. But if you don't have it, folks, I'm not saying don't pick up the new 4K. If you don't have it, you probably should if you're a fan of it. Mean Guns is a MVD Rewind Collection release. This is an action film with Ice-T and Christopher Lambert from the Highlander films. And it's about it's a new prison. It's getting ready to open, and the ruthless leader of the world's most powerful crime syndicate is he's summoned a group of prisoners there during this grand opening, and chaos ensues when weapons and ammunition are passed around, and the group are forced to fight to survive. So this was one of those films that turned up in video stores, commonly around that time. Well, actually, 1997 is when it was released, so it was almost past the VHS days, early days of DVD there. But anyway, it was kind of on the borderline, I guess you would say. But it is a cult favorite, coming out on Blu-ray for the first time ever, and a commentary here from Albert Pion, the director, and an interview with the producer of the film. So Mean Guns from MVD Rewind Collection. And The Minus Man is a Kino release, Kino Lorber, Studio Classics release. Yes, this is a Blu-ray issue of this film. It's a special edition. Serial killer floats around the country and chooses his victims from people who complain about their lives. So this is Owen Wilson, Janine Garofalo. Hampton Fancher is the director, Sheryl Crow in this, and Dwight Yoakam. So I never saw The Minus Man. I think I vaguely remember when it came out, but the plot sounds intriguing, I must say. And you never can tell. It's a 1951 Kino Lorber release as well. That's Dick Powell as a PI with a taste for kibble in this over the top screwball comedy, they say. Eccentric tycoon leaves $6 million to his faithful dog, King, and the trustee is besieged by fortune hunters when they learn she's next to inherit. So you've got Peggy Dow in this also, and Albert Sharp, so you never can tell. And then one more Kino release on that day, on April 9th, that was The Looters from 1955. And that's about an expert mountain climber and his partner finding a plane wreck in the Rockies, but the partner conspires with one of the plane survivors who stop at nothing to steal a large amount of cash found on board. Rory Calhoun, Julie Adams in this. This sounds very reminiscent of the plot of that Sam Raimi film with Bill Paxton in the late 90s. What's the... it's on the tip of my tongue. It was based on the Scott Smith novel. A Simple Plan. That's it. It comes to me. I'm having a senior moment. Simple Plan. Sounds very similar to that, The Looters. But anyway, certain maybe inspired. Who knows? Anyway, Night Swim is a recent horror film from, I believe, Blumhouse. Released this early in 2024. It's a Universal release there. And... that might be just about everything we've got for the day, for the April 9th. I think it is. Oh, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, which is a horror take on the Winnie the Pooh story. yeah. For this is a Scream Factory release. So, yeah. So we'll move along to April 16th with the release of Affliction, another Shout Factory release. This is a part of the Shout Select line of titles. Winner of the 1997 Academy Award for Best Actor in a Supporting Role, James Coburn. And Oscar nominated for Best Actor in a Leading Role, Nick Nolte. It's about a quiet little town that Nick Nolte is the he's the sheriff, I think, from what I remember. And his new girlfriend is forced to confront his past and reexamine his life with him. He's determined to fill the emptiness and must either stand tall against his childhood demons or fall victim to his father's abusive ways. And his father really is abusive in this film. James Coburn is quite terrifying in this one. Written for the screen and directed by Paul Schrader and based on the novel by Russell Banks. No extras on this, but a good transfer nonetheless. Affliction comes to Blu-ray for the first time ever. And we have Werkmeister Harmonies in 4K. This is a Criterion release. A naive young man witnesses an escalation of violence in his small hometown following the arrival of a mysterious circus attraction. This is... I wasn't familiar with this title, I must say. But did not get a review copy. But it's a 2000 film in black and white. Sounds interesting, I must say, but... a couple of television series getting Blu-ray releases. Star Trek Lower Decks. That's a... I'm trying to see which season that is. That is, I think, season 3, I believe. I believe it's season 3. Jack Ryan, the complete... Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan, the complete series and the final season. In case you have the other ones, you can get the... yeah, season 4 of Lower Decks, by the way. But the Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan coming out on via Paramount. Yes, City of Hope was released on April 9th as well, and that's a Sony Pictures Home Entertainment release. Now, this is unique in that it has never had a Blu-ray or DVD release, for that matter. Only VHS. Can you imagine that? I guess it was on Laserdisc at some point. But isn't that amazing that this film...
That's surprising, yeah.
Yeah, and it's such a well-regarded film. John Sayles, you know, it's a portrait of a mid-sized American city and its complex politics told through the narratives of several of its citizens. There's an old apartment block standing in the way of major commercial development, and its owner feels the pressure to set the apartments on fire, as it were, to allow for the new development. And then he's got a son who's estranged, and he's caught in the middle of all this. I didn't respond as strongly to this film as a lot of the critics did. I think it has some good moments and there's some good dialogue, but my problem with this film was there's a lot of, and this happens a lot in some of John Sayles' stuff, is there's a lot of telling and not showing, and film is a cinematic medium. There's a lot of characters talking about things as opposed to showing you them, and that... Now, this film is shot by Robert Richardson. This was, I think, probably around the time that he did started working with Oliver Stone. I think maybe he had done, this was probably 5 years into his career run with Oliver Stone, because he had done all the stuff up to that point. But yeah, around the time he shot JFK. So so it's well shot in the Panavision 2.35:1 aspect ratio. Great cast in this: Joe Morton, Vincent Spano, Tony LaBianco, David Strathairn, Angela Bassett in an early role, even Lawrence Tierney shows up. So, I mean, there's some good stuff here, but it's a mixed bag for me. Like I said, it's hard to get acclimated to the characters in the beginning, and you kind of get into the rhythms of it if you give it some time, go along with it. But The Transfer is great. It's great to see it on Blu-ray for the first time ever. Thankfully, that has been rectified. I know it was one of those highly requested titles, that and Thunderheart, which, ironically, Thunderheart is coming out on Blu-ray next month, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. So, John Sayles, City of Hope, like I said, a long-time requested title, finally getting Blu-ray release. And now have you seen this film, and what are your thoughts on it?
Again, this is another one of those films I haven't seen since it came out, and we've had quite a bunch of those this particular month where I haven't seen them in a long time and sort of looking forward to seeing them again.
Yeah. It's always good to revisit something. And, when we get older, we, feel differently about things as we get older. And so it's always interesting to see what our opinions are about things as time has moved on. So, yeah. Right. You'll Never Get Rich is another Blu-ray release from Sony Pictures, 1941 film, starring Fred Astaire and Rita Hayworth, about an eccentric New York theater owner who has his eye on the beautiful chorus girl, but his wife has her eye on him. I'll get that out. Blah, 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 blah. It's kind of like I love her, but she loves him, and he loves her, but we love us. It's kind of one of those things. It's, Anyway, You'll Never Get Rich, 1941. I've not seen it. I didn't get a review copy of that one. We'll move up to April the 23rd. Another Sony Pictures release is Steel Magnolias, getting a 35th anniversary release on 4K for the first time ever. This was previously issued on Blu-ray from Twilight Time, I believe. The Departed getting a 4K release for the first time ever, courtesy of Warner Brothers Home Entertainment. They ran out of review copies of this one, so I didn't get this one either. So, I can't really attest to the quality of it, but, it was the Martin Scorsese finally got his Oscar for this film, and a lot of people thought that he deserved it a long time sooner. But he finally was rewarded for The Departed. And so that has been issued, as I said, by Warner Brothers. I don't think there's any new extras here, just a lot of archival stuff being carried over. And Andre Tarkovsky's tale about the 18th century, about a guy researching the life of an 18th century composer, meeting a mysterious man who's convinced that the end of the world is nigh. This is Nostalgia, which was...
Okay, did you just trip over the word Andre and not the word Tarkovsky?
Yes, I did. My tongue is not working for some reason today. I don't know why, but yep. And as many Tarkovsky films as I've seen, I probably should have easily, that should have easily rolled off the tongue.
No, I think it's funny that the Andre is what tripped you up there, and not the long last name that is a tongue twister.
It's funny how the things you're not expecting to trip you up always do.
Yeah.
That's like life.
So true.
Yep. Nostalgia from 1983. And I think this was one of his last films. I don't know if it was the last one, but I do know it's one of the latter ones. He died fairly young of cancer that they say was brought on by his shooting the film Stalker. So some of the locations caused a lot of the cast and crew to die of cancer or to contract it. So Lars von Trier's The Kingdom has been issued on Blu-ray by Mubi, M-U-B-I, The Kingdom Trilogy, actually. So The Kingdom and Parts 2 and 3 as well. I Am Cuba is another Criterion release that is getting a 4K upgrade, four vignettes about the lives of the Cuban people set during the pre-revolutionary era from 1964. I didn't get a review copy of this one either, but it has been issued. Goodbye, Uncle Tom is getting a 4K release from Blue Underground. This is a cult film. Two documentary filmmakers go back in time to the pre-Civil War South to film the slave trade. And this is from 1971 with a boatload of extras and Blue Underground. They do pretty good work with their transfers. And so I'm sure this one is no exception to that rule. And The Beekeeper is a recent release, as is Drive Away Dolls. Drive Away Dolls is getting a Blu-ray release from, I believe that's Universal. And The Beekeeper is a Warner Brothers release. So both of those getting physical media releases.
I did see Drive Away Dolls, and I have a tenor if you'd like
to hear. Oh, yes, please, please.
Okay, I think I'm going to have to explain the tenor, but here it comes.
Okay.
Like Marion, overthought my reactions. Unlike Marion, I didn't change. So the tenor is about, you know, the character in the movie is somebody who's overthinking things, and I was sort of overthinking while I was watching, but later on she changes like characters do in movies, but my opinion remained the same.
Ah, well, that totally makes sense. I didn't see The Beekeeper, and Driveway Dolls. Yeah, I didn't see Driveway Dolls is what I meant to say. So, yeah. I heard it wasn't too bad. So, you know.
That's perfect that it wasn't too bad should become a regular ranking. It wasn't too bad.
Yeah, that sometimes that's the best way to describe something. You never know. So The Scarf Mob is a 1959 film. It's actually was supposed to be the pilot film for the Untouchables television series. And it's about the story of the lawmen who battled the deadliest criminal in American history, Al Scarface Capone. Robert Stack starring in this, Keenan Wynn. And as I said, it was so good, or considered to be so good, that they decided to release it as a theatrical film instead. And Phil Carlson directs this. He's the director of Walking Tall and Mitchell from the... or is it Framed? I believe it's Framed. Yeah, he directed from... 1975 with Joe Don Baker. He did two of those Joe Don Baker films, and the Phoenix Story in the 50s. He did that as well. So yeah, Phil Carlson was a good director of those kind of urban dramas and that kind of stuff, or suburban dramas, whatever, you know, a lot of that type stuff. So anyway, Paul Monash is one of the screenwriters on this. He actually was the screenwriter for Carrie, the 1976 Carrie. So that's interesting, I think. So, yeah, The Scarface Mob is an Arrow release, Arrow Video release, and there's a lot of interesting extras on this. Trying to see if I can get my list of extras to pull up on this. You get a brand new video essay on the film, and you get gallery of original posters, lobby cards, publicity photos. Postcards? Yeah, so The Scarface Mob from 1959. Rolling Thunder, one of Quentin Tarantino's favorite films, he often cites. Rolling Thunder from 1977, starring William Devane and Tommy Lee Jones and the recently deceased Linda Haynes. Dabney Coleman and James Best. They are all in the cast in this film. Co-written by Paul Schrader and directed by John Flynn. So this comes to 4K for the first time ever. Again, didn't get a review copy of this, but the word on the street is that the transfer is quite good. And I think there are a few new extras here as well on this edition. So it's a Shout Select release from Shout Factory, part of their Shout Select line of titles. And speaking of John Sayles, a dramatization of the Black Sox scandal when the underpaid Chicago White Sox accepted bribes to deliberately lose the 1919 World Series. That is 8 Men Out I'm talking about. That's being issued by MGM. They have their own label now, putting out some Blu-rays from 1988. So another John Sayles film This one starring John Cusack, Clifton James, Michael Lerner, Christopher Lloyd, John Mahoney, Charlie Sheen. So, yeah, being a baseball fan, I take it you may be familiar with this one.
I am familiar with that one, and that one I actually like. I haven't seen it in a while, but it's very well done, and the cast is amazing. You just laid out the cast, and that is a solid film. I would highly recommend it.
Very good. All right, so we'll move along to the last day of the month. We finally got there. It only took us an hour and a half, but but there's some good stuff here on the last day of the month. They sometimes save the best for last. Mean Girls from 2004 coming to 4K for the first time ever, and that's timed with the release of the musical remake from this year. They both were released on April 30th. Mean Girls is, you know, pretty solid. Maybe, you know, it has this huge fan following. I don't think it's quite that good, but it's good. It's solid, and I don't dislike it. But it's good to, and it's good to have it in 4K. I didn't see the musical remake. Those sorts of things generally aren't my cup of tea, but I do have a review copy of it, so I'll probably get to it eventually. But yes, Mean Girls and the Mean Girls remake from Paramount Home Entertainment, Dr. Terror's House of Horrors. And I was wondering what your thoughts are on these Amicus anthology films. They made so many of those, about five or six, I think. And this was the first of those from 1965. I don't know if you've seen any of those, but I'm a big fan of all of those Amicus anthology films, like Tales from the Crypt and The Vault of Horror and Asylum.
Right.
And these are just, they're always so much fun. And this one.
Yeah. So. I got it, but I haven't seen it yet, so I can't comment. I have nothing to contribute.
Well, that's quite all right. This one freaked me out when I was a kid. I saw this one when I was about, I think I was 8 at the time. I think it was early 1979. I remember it being on one of our local television stations, and I saw it one Saturday night. And it stuck with me because there's one of the stories involves Christopher Lee. He's an art critic, and I think it's Michael Goh who played the butler in, or Goff, however you pronounce his name, played the butler in the Batman films with Michael Keaton. And he plays I believe he's a painter, and Christopher Lee is the critic, and he's very judgmental on his art, and so he eventually, I think he runs over him, I think that's what it is, or... anyway, point is that Christopher Lee is terrorized by this hand. That's all I know. And so it really made an impression on me when I saw it. I was like, wow, this is really scary
stuff.
That
sounds really good.
Yeah, the person that Christopher Lee runs over, long story short, comes back to terrorize him. Let's just put it that way. So, it was good. It was good. So I'm so glad to see this getting a 4K Ultra HD release. I have the old Olive... Olive put this out, and it's a now defunct label. They put it out a couple of years ago, and it's way out of print. So I'll probably upgrade to the 4K eventually of Dr. Terror's House of Horrors when they have a sale, because I'm sure the transfer is good on that. The Tin Star, that's from 1957, starring Henry Fonda as a sheriff who has to... he's a recently appointed sheriff, and he's a cynical. He's actually a cynical ex-sheriff turned bounty hunter, helping a young sheriff get the town back in order. That's essentially what it is. Anthony Mann directing this. Anthony Perkins also starring in this. Neville Brand as one of the villains, I think, in the piece. John McIntyre. This is considered to be a pretty solid Western. And I did get a review copy of this.
What if we
put it in long enough to get to take a look at the quality of it, and it looked quite good. So The Tin Star from 1957, an Arrow Video release. And another Arrow Video release is Basket Case from 1982. That's one that definitely was in our local video store, or just about every video store I went in as a youth. It was always there, Basket Case. And it's hard to imagine Basket Case being released in 4K because it's not the kind of film that screams out, hey, I need a 4K release, because it was filmed in gritty 16mm. And yet, the 4K release is quite good, I have to admit. I did take the time to review this one and watch it, and I was impressed with the quality. The 4K really does a good job, and with the HDR they put in on there, the high dynamic range, it captures those blacks really well, and it's just it's a good remastering of Basket Case. I really enjoyed it. So from 1982, and it's loaded with extras, let me tell you. I mean, there's all kinds of featurettes and behind the scenes stuff, and there's so much there. You'll probably spend three times the amount of time you spent watching the film watching the extras. So there's just a lot of really comprehensive stuff. So Basket Case from Arrow Video, highly recommended, I would say. It's good. And all the Ocean's films, again, I didn't get review copies of these, but Ocean's 12, 13, and 11, 12, and 13 coming to 4K in a separately and together. You can get them as a trilogy set and separately. So those are all.
I do have.
Yeah. Yeah, let's hear it.
I do have a tenor of Ocean 13 from my sister.
Uh-huh.
And she says, they finally achieved the perfect combination of dialogue, music, coolness.
Nice. Very, very good.
So if you're only going to pick one of those three, go for Ocean 13.
Okay. We'll take that advice. Yeah. So, yeah, Madam Web, the recent Madam Web that came and went very quickly from Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. It's an offshoot of the Spider-Man franchise. Somehow it's tied in there. I didn't see it, so I can't say. But Madam Web getting a 4K and a Blu-ray release, both. So, The Getaway from 1994, Alec Baldwin and Kim Basinger. Is this the film? This is not the film they met on. I think that was it was one of the earlier films they met.
Was that Marrying Man?
I was going to say Marrying Man, yeah. But they were well into their relationship by the time they made The Getaway, which is a remake of the 22 years earlier film from Sam Peckinpah that of course, starred Steve McQueen and Ally McGraw. And, of course, they became lovers while making that film.
Oh, there's something about that script.
Yeah, it draws people together or something. Anyway, The Getaway from directed by Roger Donaldson from 1994, getting a Blu-ray release for the first time ever from Shout Factory. And we'll move on to a title that I know you mentioned, we'll talk about it. Dogfight from Criterion. I did get a review copy of this one, and it's quite a nice transfer on this film. It's listed as an ineffably bittersweet portrait of youth in the 60s. And it's basically, you can talk about it if you want to. I'll not go through the plot if you want to talk about it a little bit. But I will tell about the extras, the audio commentary here from the director, a new interview with the director and Lily Taylor, who stars in the film, and new interviews with the cinematographer, production designer. There's a trailer, essay on the film. So if you're a fan of Dogfight, with River Phoenix and Lily Taylor, and I'll get you to tell us a little bit about the story of the film and what your thoughts are.
Okay, well, it's a Nancy Savoca movie, and I think there are a few more of those coming up, so she's a very particular genre, and there's a real palpable feeling to when you're watching one of her movies. You're going to have a reaction. You're going to have a gut reaction to what's going on. In this particular movie, River Phoenix and his buddies are Marines, and they're about to ship out, and they have this thing called a dogfight where they bring who they consider to be the ugliest people to a party, and whoever brings the worst in their eyes looking person wins this competition, which is just, it's horrific. I mean, it's just an awful, awful thing. And, you know, these guys are no prizes themselves, but they think they're able to judge who is worthy of, you know, being good looking and not good looking. Anyway, that's like a whole separate debate, and it's actually worked into the film, and Lily Taylor really gets in there with that, with who do these guys think they are? They're no prizes themselves, and to do this to women, the premise is that they're supposed to treat them really nice and not sort of tell them, not let them know what's going on, not let them know that they're in this dogfight. So it's still kind of it's definitely a mean-spirited idea. Mm-hmm. But what I love about this movie is, and this is, I'll give my tenor first and then I'll go. And this is a debut tenor. It's not published yet anywhere. This is specifically for Adam's Corner. This is how you earn character development in 90 minutes is my tenor. And what we inevitably see when we watch movies is people get to different emotional points, and sometimes it doesn't feel earned. It doesn't feel like they got there, you know, like in a manner that feels right. It feels like there's something wrong. But here, every growth is earned, and it's not all at once. It happens over the span of the movie and even up to the very, very end, where people grow in increments. And River Phoenix's character is a Marine, and he acts like a Marine at the start of the movie, and by the end of the movie he's a human being, you know, and we get to see why that is. And I think he's brilliant in it. I think Lily Taylor is amazing in it. How anybody could ever consider her part of a dogfight. Well, when River Phoenix is bringing his person to the dogfight, he can't find anybody. And so what he does is try and dress down Lily Taylor, who is, her character is a little overweight, but wouldn't really win him this so-called competition. So he tries to sort of mess her up by putting extra lipstick on her and all this stuff. But over the course of the film, these two become more aware of each other. Lily Taylor's a little naive. She grows up. River Phoenix is very Marine-like. He grows up. And I just think it's, by the end of the movie, it's just so well-earned. And I really love it. Highly recommend it. One of my favorite movies of that time period.
Yeah, I would agree. It's definitely kind of an overlooked film that deserves a little more looking at, I guess you would say. Yeah. And most of the critics were in favor of it too. It was a critically revered film that just kind of got lost in the shuffle for some reason.
Which is amazing, because those two people, those two actors, were the it actors of that time period. And so you think if something wouldn't get overlooked, maybe it's the premise of it just turned too many people off for them to go to the movie. But if you watch it, you'll see it's worthy. It's definitely worthy.
Yeah. And thankfully, Criterion has rectified its absence on Blu-ray for the first time. And that's a good thing for people who aren't familiar with it, or you know, they gives them an opportunity to catch up to it. A couple of Radiance Films releases I want to mention right quick. The Shape of Night is in this film, a young woman is forced into a life of prostitution after she falls in love with a hoodlum. It's a Japanese drama from Noburo Nakamura. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly. I hope I did. The extras include a visual essay and new subtitles. This is from 1964. And Misunderstood, a British council decides to tell his oldest son of his mother's passing, but not the youngest child, in this drama. It was nominated for a Palme d'Or at Cannes in 1966. Anthony Quayle starring, extras including a visual essay and new subtitles. So that is what we have for the Radiance Films releases. Starting Over with Burt Reynolds and Jill Clayburgh and Candice Bergen was a Kino release that was slated to be released this past Tuesday, April 30th, from when we're recording this, but I did not get my review copy, and there were some delays in some of the Kino products, so this may be one of those titles that was delayed. So I'm not sure. What happened was the James Cameron titles, there was such an overwhelming demand for those back in March that caused some delays for other, because there's only one manufacturing facility, I think, now in the United States, believe it or not, for all of these discs. So the replicating plant, I guess you would say. So, believe it or not, that's the case. We don't know about Starting Over, but hopefully I'll be able to comment more in depth on it later. Red Rock West is a terrific thriller that was released by Vinegar Syndrome back in January in a special special steelbook edition, I think it was, or limited edition packaging or something. Anyway, it's been reissued in standard edition. I love this film. It's Nicolas Cage, directed by John Dahl. He comes to the town looking for one job and winds up becoming a hired gun by J.T. Walsh, hires him to kill his wife, and one thing leads to another. I'll not say any more than that, but if you haven't seen it, you should see Red Rock West as sooner rather than later. Francis Ford Coppola's The Rain People, which is one of the... he made three films for Warner Brothers and in the 60s, and this was the third of those films, and I really adore this film as well. I was really, really happy to see this coming to Blu-ray. Mine is on the way. I haven't received it yet, so I can't really report on the quality, but I'm sure it's quite good because it's a Warner Archive release, and they always do such great work. And next month, they're going to be issuing You're a Big Boy Now, which was his first film for Warner Brothers, and that's another Warner Archive title. And I can't wait for that one either because I love that one as well. And so The Rain People is about a woman played by Shirley Knight who leaves her husband and befriends a brain-damaged football player played by James Caan as she's on the she meets him on the road as she, after she leaves her husband. And it's just a really, really touching film shot in real locations. And George Lucas did a documentary film about the making of it that got him some acclaim, and that kind of led to him doing American THX 1138, which led to American Graffiti, and which led to Star Wars, and you know the rest of the stories. So yeah, so a couple other releases from Warner Archive on that day: Devil's Doorway from 1950 and The Mask of Fu Manchu from 1932. Those were also issued, and so those are some of your Warner Archive titles. Again, Warner Archive getting a little bit behind with some of their releases because of the backlog of titles that are being replicated. Like I said, they're having some problems there. So you referenced this or made an allusion to it, I guess it were. Another Nancy Savoca film, True Love, from 1989, getting a release for the first time on Blu-ray from Kino Lorber. It's a 1989 Sundance Grand Jury Prize winner. And it was one of those early, you know, kind of jump-started the indies movement in the 90s, but it was late 80s, around the same time Sex, Lies, and Videotape. Those were the two films that kind of got that thing going. And it's humorous, but it has a lot of drama in it, too. It's about Ron Eldard plays this character, Michael, and Donna is Annabelle Sciorra. And they're a young couple preparing for their wedding in an Italian enclave of the Bronx. And they go to bars and pizzerias, and there's scenes in living rooms, and you kind of get a real sense of these people's lives and all that. So it's kind of a slight film. But it has some really true moments in it, and gives you. I don't know. I enjoy it. I think it's good, and I don't know what your thoughts are about it, but we'll let you tell us.
Okay. I think it's one of those films where you see reality in it, and yeah, sometimes it's too much reality.
That's
but
true.
But a lot of the times it's funny and also makes you understand things about life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what she excels at. She's like pointing out things that there may be small moments that you sort of overlook when you're going through your daily life. And then you look at on screen and you're, oh, wow. Okay. And I just remember the ending, how it hit. It hit so much after going through this thing, which seems like it may be slight. They're going through, you know, two engaged people going through the path on the way to getting married, and then they get to the end of that path and you're like, oh, this is how it is, you know.
Yeah.
And you sort of know what's gonna come next for them. I don't want to say, because I do want people to watch this movie. It's worthy of being watched, and like you said, it was at the forefront of these just this indie movement that became so massive and gave us so many great films.
Yeah. Yeah, it really did. It really
and a
did.
Good, and it has a really nice soundtrack too, I'll add.
Oh, it does. Certainly does. Yeah, you're right. But yeah, it's a good transfer. I did get a chance to look at this, and the transfer is solid. And you know, good audio there on that. The audio track is solid. So yeah, True Love. If you're not familiar with it or are on the fence about purchasing it, yeah, it's worth a purchase from Kino Lorber Studio Classics. And we're getting to the tail end of things here. Let's see, we have Death and the Maiden from 1994. That's a Shout Factory release, directed by Roman Polanski. This is a limited edition. I think there's only 1,600 of these being manufactured. So if you're a fan of this, you might want to run out and go get it right quick. So there is that too. And then Hansel and Gretel is a 1987 retelling from the Golan and Globus team, who were the heads of Canon Pictures. So it's a Canon production starring David Warner, Hugh Pollard, Cloris Leachman as the witch. And so that's from Cape Light Pictures as well. So Hansel and Gretel getting the 1987 version from Canon, getting a Blu-ray release too. And I think that about covers all of the releases for the month of April, I must say.
Do we have another Nancy Savoca? Household Saints this month?
Yeah, I may have overlooked that one. Let me look and see, just to make sure, because I think you are correct on that. And for some reason, it didn't come up. So let me, well, maybe you can speak to that, because I didn't get a review copy of that, but I'll let you go ahead and,
Okay. Well,
April 23rd, April 23rd, okay. Milestone released this. So yes, you are correct. Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's okay. It's your show.
Okay.
After True Love and before Dogfight, I believe, came Household Saints. And I have a debut tenor for you on this, but I'll try and encompass what this is about. I think I read the book on this before I saw the movie. And again, it's about an Italian family and the way they go about their lives. And it's the same sort of thing with True Love. You see yourself, Italian or not, you see yourself in these characters. And Vincent D'Onofrio and Tracy Ullman get married, and he kind of wins her in a pinochle game. That doesn't sit well with, I think it's Judith Molina, who's the mother. And she is very religious, and so she thinks Tracy Ullman is not the right fit for her son, and that they've sort of cursed themselves. They get married, and they have a miscarriage, then the mother dies, and then Lily Taylor's character is born, and she's a very devout, sort of taking after her deceased grandmother. But even more so, and she becomes this soul who, is she a saint? You know, is she just not a human, but is she just a normal person who's going crazy by doing things for other people? And you sort of think about it. It makes you think about, you know, like saints. Is everybody who is fervent, are they a saint? Are they mentally unbalanced? And you don't really know which way it's going with that. Mm-hmm. And that's what I find really interesting about this particular movie. So I'll give you my tenor on this, and then I'll explain it because I didn't say this part. And it's sorry about
that. Quite all right.
An inspired premise enables me to discard initial casting misgivings. So what I'm saying here is the casting is that Lily Taylor is Vincent D'Onofrio's daughter. Okay, so for all of us who saw Mystic Pizza and loved it and saw it many, many times, they were fiancé, they got married in the course of Mystic Pizza, and now she's his daughter. And so I found that so jarring when I was watching Household Saints. But because this movie is so well made, it enables you to get past it. He's wonderful. She's wonderful, and Tracy Ullman's wonderful. It's a fine movie, and I'm glad all three of these Nancy Savoca movies are getting their just due.
Yes, I am too. Yeah, it's amazing how they all came together in 1 month, all the Nancy Savoca Film Festival, as it were. So, or retrospective, maybe, I don't know. But
yes, yeah. Buy them all. Maybe watch them in order to see how she's grown, progressed.
Yeah, and supposedly Household Saints was released in 1993, which would have been after Dogfight, I think.
After Dogfight. Yeah. Okay, so watch True Love, Dogfight, then yeah. Household Saints.
Yep, that sounds about right. So, yeah, I think that's the trajectory. And, and this is one I remember when it came out. I didn't receive a review copy of it, and I just never saw it. So I need to see this one. This is a blind spot in my Nancy Savoca filmography, as it were. So,
oh, yeah. I can't wait till you see it, and I hope I didn't give away too much.
No,
but...
not at all. I'll even when spoilers are revealed to me, I always enjoy the journey getting there, so it doesn't really bother me when that happens. So, yeah. Well, thank you for coming on again to talk Blu-rays and 4Ks and all of that.
Oh, it's my pleasure. King Kong and Nancy Savoca, we have run the gamut.
Yes, we certainly have. Yes, all the way down to Cannon's production of Hansel and Gretel. So we're and everything in between.